Hi, everyone. This is California News, a podcast that brings you the latest news from across California. Now, here's your host, Dr. Carlos.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Well, today we have a great guest, a guest I've been really waiting for a long time. I've seen a lot of her posts on social media. I've watched a lot of her interviews on YouTube, so I'm really excited to have her. Marie Spano. It's M-A-R-I-E. Last name is Spano, S-P-A-N-O. You can find her at mariespano.com. So you definitely want to check it out. Well, who is she? Well, she's one of the country's leading sports nutritionists. And I'm telling you, she really is. If you listen to her, you'll definitely know she knows her stuff. She is the previous Major League Sports Nutritionist for the Atlanta Braves, 2017 to 2022, the world champions, unbeknownst to her. I'm a huge Braves fan. Also Atlanta Falcons, Atlanta Hawks, and the former Atlanta Thrashers. They moved to Canada. That's another show for another day. And Black Zillions MMA, which she doesn't know either. I love MMA and I also train. So this is going to be a great one. I have a lot of questions in regards to that. And she is known for solving complex problems from severe muscle cramping and gastrointestinal pain, keeping players on the field, quarterites. She treats each player as an individual. And what I read it to say, I'm not going to read the whole bio. There's a lot more you can read at mariespano.com. But I wanted to highlight that because I think that's going to be the underlying foundation of this whole discussion today, is that everybody is an individual. And we'll learn a little bit about that. Everybody's got a unique genetic makeups. And that's going to be really important as this discussion goes on. Before we get started, you know what to do. Make sure to share, subscribe, hit that like button. You know we like it. Let's not waste any more time. Welcome to the show, Marie Spano. Welcome, Marie.
Thank you, Carlos. I'm so excited to speak with you today. You've had some great guests, and it's an honor to be here.
Well, thank you very much. I've been really blessed. We've had a lot, and we continue on now with you. So I guess my very first question, this is an interesting one. We talked a little bit before the show. I get some interesting challenges every so often. You might have heard the classic one. What's wrong with a burger? It's got all four food groups. And well, I guess, yeah, it does, I guess. But this one says, do we process nutrients the same way? In other words, if we have enriched products like potato chips, I like potato chips, and I've noticed that I'm going to pick a potato chip that has high potassium. It helped me out a little bit here. And it did. And, it, you know, I like it a lot. And then as the people started asking me, well, isn't it better to get it from a banana? Isn't it better to get calcium from milk instead of getting enriched in your orange juice? Or does it make a difference?
You know, it does, but consumers get into nuances when we think about it. The potassium example, you can get your potassium from potato chips. You can get them from a potato. But the difference depends on the nutrient we're talking about, and it depends on where the nutrient is found. So for instance, I put something up the other day about, you know, getting calcium from almonds or leafy greens or milk. And it's actually more bioavailable from kale than it is milk, but it's got such a small serving in kale that you'd have to eat an absolute ton of it. Some nutrients are more bioavailable in more processed foods, or if they're added versus if they're found naturally. So it really depends on the nutrient. It depends on how the food is cooked. There's a difference if it's cooked kale versus if it's regular kale. So we get into a lot of different, you know, it depends on the nutrient, depends on the food.
That's a great answer. By the way, she's a registered dietitian, folks. She also is a sports dietitian nutritionist. She has a CSCS and she's got a master's in science, I believe, in nutrition as well. And that changes a lot of things because you understand a lot of the chemical structures, which a lot of people don't. And we'll get into this discussion later about how sometimes people oversimplify things and it becomes not accurate. By the way, I forgot to mention, you can check out Marie Spano on Instagram. I love her Instagram. I follow it. I check it out every day to see what she's posting. Got some great stuff you definitely don't want to miss out on. And I know we're not going to be able to cover everything today as much as I wish we could. The other thing, I think you mentioned this on your Instagram post, but I wanted our listeners to hear in case they're not following you, is that sometimes people will look at chemicals, and I've seen individuals, remain nameless, but individuals that'll say, look, this has got, I can't even say this product, this chemical. And I'm looking at it going, well, that's it's a vitamin or it's a mineral. It's just the chemical name of it, whatever. But then they show these things and they say, look, it's got all these chemicals compared to this one thing. Mm-hmm. Now, there are certain ones I'd love to ask you about. And maybe we get a chance. Maybe we'll throw it into this question. Like, I don't know if I should name a product or not. There's a certain product that has red dye in it. And that's a big thing. We know Europe doesn't allow it right now. I think they use beets or whatever else they use for coloring. But this product has red dye. It's got four other things that were not vitamins and minerals. I don't even know what these things were. And then I compared it to like a potato chip, a Lay's potato chip that had canola oil and potato. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. wow. Okay. That's easy enough. So what does that mean? Is it, do we have to be careful and quickly like, judging these foods?
So, you know, two answers there. For one thing, just because it's got a name you can't pronounce, it doesn't mean that it's not good for you. It might be there, like you said, it might be a vitamin, it might be a mineral, you might not in a different form. Like a lot of people don't know, you know, vitamin C is called ascorbic acid in, you know, certain foods. So it really depends. It may not matter. That's the short answer. And then the other answer is that, you know, generally speaking, if you have something with fewer ingredients, let's say you got the potato chips with the oil, what do they have? Corn oil, potatoes, salt, versus one that has a ton of different ingredients. You may have, you know, an adverse effect to the one with many ingredients. We don't know, but some people have sensitivities or it might not settle well because of one of the ingredients. So if you're looking at something, sure, it might make more sense in some instances to take the plain version if you like it better. But if you don't think you have any issues with the one with all the ingredients, sometimes they're preservatives. Sometimes they're coloring agents. You know, as consumers, I think it's difficult for a consumer to go, oh, I know what this is, and to differentiate if it's beneficial or if it's not beneficial.
Excellent point. Yeah, it kind of reminds me too of this interesting argument that I've heard, and I don't think it's necessarily bad because I know some people say, well, look, it's got red dye 40. I don't want it. It's linked to this. And I'm a big fan. I really like studying a lot of it prenatal. Nutrition is really interesting to me, wow. and teratogens and things of that nature because of the background. So it's kind of, it's really amazing to me how much of an impact nutrition has on the baby's neurobiological development. And now it's mom's the word out there. Mm-hmm. They don't say a whole lot out there about it. Unless you dig for it, you can find it. But I guess one of the arguments, and I just want to kind of get your thoughts, is that I'm not going to have it. It's got the red dye. I'm out. And I don't, yeah, you know what? They're right. Sometimes things can turn up 10, 15 years later where they say, oops, you know, I think it was Tylenol. 30 years ago, you know, doctors used to say, oh, you know, you have as many as you want. It was, you know, people were popping them like Tic Tacs. And it's like, then they start backing off. Ah, wait a minute. Can't you have more than eight? Just, you know, yeah. cut it out. And if anybody knows the history of pharmaceuticals, you know, heroin 100 years ago, hey, you got a cough, you know, try this stuff out. So I don't know. What do you think about those things? Should people, is it okay to be cautious like that?
Yeah, I think it's fine. You know, you had mentioned this before when we were speaking, but you have choices. You can choose, you know, things that are colored with beets or colored with another natural food coloring if you want. There are so many options out there. You're probably going to pay more, but if you don't want it and you want to avoid certain things, or if you feel like, hey, I notice a difference, then go ahead and avoid them. We've got a million different options out there for just about every different food.
That's true. Very true. That reminds me of this one that I love the way that the story was told. I'll just say that it was very clever. Again, I won't mention names, but it was the oxalate story mm-hmm. about vegetables and how they protect themselves and really clever stuff. I looked it up myself and I was like, oh, this is interesting. You can't have, oh, look at that. It protects them against the predators like a rabbit, you know, the nasty little mm-hmm. rabbit and they increase oxalate levels. But then I heard somebody say, I was talking to a chef and he said, yeah, but you finish half of those guys are off. You cook them. Yeah. What's going on with that?
Yeah. So that's a really good point. You know, people say that, and I brought this up once on Instagram. If you're looking for a natural pesticide, look at caffeine. That's a natural pesticide. People are okay with taking that, but oh my gosh, we can't have anything with oxalates in it, right? Or phytic acid or anything. And yeah, that chef is absolutely correct. If you cook, you're going to decrease those dramatically. They do bind certain minerals and compounds, but when we look at the daily value and when we look at the, you know, estimated amount each person should consume, the DRIs based on age range and sex, it takes into account a varied diet. So it does take into account lower bioavailability of, let's say, certain minerals like calcium because of phytic acid, because of oxalic acid.
Interesting. You know, I'll ask you this. A lot of things are coming up in my head. And I know I didn't prep you before this because everything's impromptu for me. But I did an interview a while back, I think it was a year ago, with Dr. Frank von Hippel, I think was his last name. He was on Joe Rogan. And we had a discussion on the show about toxins and things of that nature and a little bit about food. And he was talking about, I think he called it toxin accumulation. This is something that people don't usually see a lot about. What is that all about? And is it relevant here?
You know, that's a topic I'm not very familiar with. My guess is that he is talking about, hey, these toxins in small amounts can accumulate in the body. Is that what he mentioned?
Exactly. So it doesn't get removed. Yeah.
Yeah. Over time. Was he talking about that in regard to foods or things like plastic and phthalates? And
no, it wasn't any of, I think it was phthalates. Yeah, it was phthalates. I think we were talking about it. It might've even been cadmium. I can't remember.
Or like the PFAS, those compounds in like frying pans and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So that those do accumulate in their body. And from what I understand, it takes a long, long time to get rid of. And we know that some of those are carcinogenic or they're tied to, you know, they're cancer causing compounds. Now the dose and the poison, I don't know. And does it matter, you know, genetics and all these other factors, everything else you're exposed to? I assume that, you know, all those things go into one. And, but yeah, the more you're exposed to that, you have greater, that toxic burden in your body, I would assume. Is that what he had mentioned?
Yeah, he was just talking about, there was no absolute on it. It was a theory of him, his game. It was his idea. It was a theory that he proposed. And a lot of people, you know, sometimes have a misunderstanding that theories are facts. And yep. He was just throwing out a conjecture and he thought this is possible. And we haven't really looked at it. So we don't know if 10 years of phthalates all of a sudden adds up and you're like, oh no, this stuff never got cleared.
Yeah.
And now it's storing.
That would make sense. And you know, what's interesting to me is sometimes you talk to scientists and they know things way before we see them in the public. For instance, if you look at bisphenol A, I remember talking to a chemist at the CDC years, before everyone started taking it out of, baby pacifiers and everything else. And, he was drinking out of a glass and I was like, why do you drink out of glass? Or why do you always have metal? Everyone else has these plastic Nalgene bottles and stuff. And he said, oh, because of BPA. And he started explaining what BPA was. And this was years before it was so well known and people went, oh my gosh, I can't have a, canned food with BPA in it. So my guess too is that, some people are studying this and they may be well aware of it, but it doesn't come out for years later, like you had mentioned earlier.
That's a great point. Excellent point. That's actually interesting because I don't drink out of plastic bottles anymore. I switched over, I guess it's a free plug to Voss water, even though I don't drink the Voss water anymore out of it, but I use the glass. Because it's nice. Yeah.
The water tastes different to me. It tastes different out of plastic versus metal versus glass.
Doesn't it though? It really does.
Yeah. I think it tastes way different.
I think it tastes better. It's kind of odd. I think even food tastes better off a plate.
Absolutely. Versus plastic.
Yeah. Except plastic plates. Sometimes I don't feel like doing dishes. Oh, let's see here. We'll switch over to sports now. By the way, again, we're talking to Marie Spano, MarieSpano. You can find her at mariespano.com, Marie Spano on Instagram. I want to segue a little bit over to sports because this is an area that I see you have a lot of experience in. And I guess the first question is, athletes do require different diets or whatever you want to say, nutrition, than the general population. It's a very different game, especially if you're going to eat before sports and after sports and all that. Am I correct on that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can get somebody in the same exact position, the same weight, maybe they run the same amount of yardage approximately in practice every day. Let's say it's a football player, but their diets and their dietary needs are going to be very different and their taste preferences will be different.
That's true too. I want to make it even more complicated for the audience to see how complex nutrition is. It's not going to be a complex question for you, but it does vary for individuals prepubescent. If you have youth, what they eat compared to 24-year-old, and then we'll throw one more in there compared to somebody who's 70. Am I right on that too?
Oh, absolutely. Your nutrient needs are different. The absorption of certain nutrients, let's say vitamin B12, that'll change as you get older. And then also, of course, your metabolism will change to an extent. Part of that is physical activity and, muscle loss with aging. So absolutely needs change over a lifetime.
That one keeps popping up. What's the deal with vitamin B12? I hear that a lot.
Yeah. It's funny. It's so popular now. And people say to me, they're like, oh my gosh, I get these vitamin B12 shots and I feel better. As we age, there's one thing, we don't have the intrinsic factor, which we need to be able to absorb B12. So for the older people, like the elderly, that's one of those nutrients that they have to look at for anemia. They may have low B12. And then for other individuals, and one reason it may pop up, I suspect, but I don't know, some of us may have genetic differences where we don't absorb, we need that methylated form. So people get it from food. You don't need much B12. You need it in microgram doses, and it's stored in your body for about 5 years at a time. So it's one of those unusual. It's the only water-soluble vitamin that's actually stored in your body. But I think people may feel different because, again, they may need that methylated form, which they'll get from certain supplements.
That's fascinating. I never knew that. Yeah. It's interesting because I know I talked to, I know you probably gotten this question before. I had a client who's 89 and she's having intestinal issues. And it was funny. I know we kind of jumped out of sports for a second, folks. We'll come back. But it was reminding me of this. And she says, well, I've eaten pasta sauce my whole life. It's never bothered me. And I'm thinking, yeah, but you're not the same person.
No. And you know what's crazy? You can develop allergies or you can develop like sensitivities to food at any point in your life. You can develop an allergy and then a couple of years later that you don't have the same, you're not getting hives from food. So those reactions can come and go.
You hit a hornet's nest there. I have to bring it up. But, again, it would be just an interesting conversation because sometimes the peanut butter thing was fascinating. When I was starting to read about it, if you gave children peanut butter, they started to develop. They did not develop, but they were able to not get allergies later on in life. A lot of them, obviously, there's not 100% of anything. That was really interesting. I don't know if you have any insight on that.
Yeah. One thing I can say about peanut butter, it's one of those allergies that if you have that anaphylactic shock reaction, that's one that you typically don't get rid of. But people misunderstand peanuts and peanut butter because it's actually a very heavy protein. So if you're sitting next to somebody on an airplane, let's say, who's eating peanuts, you're not going to have an anaphylactic shock reaction unless they take the finger and they put their finger in your mouth or something. So it's a little, but that's more interesting research. And I love that they're doing that with different foods and that early exposure to see how does this, what does this do to someone later in life? It may decrease their risk of other allergies.
Yeah, it's fascinating because I know that sometimes it seems like how would you say the food industry jumps the gun on some of these things. And now it's like everything's no peanuts. Can't have peanuts 100%. Anywhere.
They don't want to be, nobody wants to be sued. Airplanes took them off. Schools, like, they just don't want to be sued.
That's a great point. Yeah, that's true. I'm looking at them and going, wow, what's this peanut thing? I grew up with eating peanut butter. No problem. Again, for the athletes, you have to look at energy systems as well, don't you, in regards to foods? Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe an example of an athlete? I'm going to pick MMA if it's okay with you.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of MMA guys are probably listening to this and gals, actually. We've interviewed a lot of female fighters as well. What is some of the things you work with when it comes to MMA fighters?
Oh my gosh. One of the biggest things is that pre-fight nutrition, getting down in weight. And I've had one guy, pretty well-known guy who had a challenge meeting his weight goals because he was in an unrealistic category. But that's probably the biggest thing. And then, that everyday fueling, trying to keep them at a place where they can quickly drop weight before a fight if they need to, which they always need to. But also where they have enough energy every day to train, because the training is rigorous, right? It's hard, it's fast. They've got to recover very quickly to be able to, train again the next day. That is a tough sport, such a tough sport.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you ever worked with anybody in special forces.
I haven't, no.
When they go through training camps, it's amazing to me what they're deprived of through the training. Because they're deprived of food, they're deprived of sleep, and I'm looking at it going, wow, this would be like, I don't know how you think, but I'm wondering, as we just met today, but I'm wondering, is this like, oh, this is a challenge for me? Or is this like, oh, this is a nightmare for me, because I really don't know what to do with these people.
Yeah, I wouldn't see it as a challenge. I don't want to go through that myself. The crazy stories I've heard, no chance would I want to go through that. Because I would think your body's going to break down, right? You've got 5 hours of sleep, you're under fueled, and they're putting all those stresses on the body to mimic, I suppose, to mimic that stress of combat. Right. But some of the stories I've heard is they'll take things like cookie dough and they'll put it, inside, like right by their body, because they need those high calorie foods. And it's, it's edible, it's soft. I guess, they use pasteurized eggs or something like that. I don't know what they use, but, or they make their own bars, so to speak, but then they've got high calories readily available when they're out there, training, because when you're in a fight situation, you can't sit there and eat, right? So you're basically training our body. Our body is so adaptable. And to me, that's the extreme. Like, that's the extreme athlete, because you have to train them in these situations where they're deprived of sleep, deprived of food, deprived of water.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's, yeah, the cookie dough. I remember that one. It's really fascinating to listen to their stories. They're like, I haven't eaten for 12 hours, or I eat whatever's in my backpack. And I'm thinking, Jesus, how do you maintain that?
It's unbelievable what they subsist on. And it's, to me, their mind, it's almost like they're programmed differently, because again, we know we can change, you know, fuel with an athlete, and we can adapt so that they're using more fat. Let's say if they're an endurance athlete and they're out there running a, you know, Ultraman or something like that. But you know, in combat situations, that's the extreme. You have to be able to, you know, you don't have water. You're not going to have a food. You don't necessarily have all those chews and gummies, or you might run out. Who knows what the situation is?
Absolutely. That'd be kind of fun. Maybe we'll have a future episode if you care to come back, and we'll bring a special forces guy who I know is also competing MMA and or jiu-jitsu, and you guys can be interesting conversation.
Oh my gosh.
Because I know with special forces, it's just like you said, I don't know, it's an interesting experiment on human beings.
It sure is. And like I said, I think they're all wired differently in the head. You know, most people just break down on the training alone, the training and then lack of substance. You know, you look at, we always talk about low energy availability, or red S, you know, when an athlete doesn't have enough fuel, and what happens to their bones, what happens to a man's testosterone over time. And yet this is what they go through, you know,
day in and day out. It's really amazing.
It is.
So if you know anybody in special forces folks who are trying to get into it, you might want to contact Marie Spano, or at least check out her website, because I think it'd be highly recommended. If you're in MMA fighting right now, if you don't have a nutritionist, you're dropping the ball. You really are. I mean, it's such a big game changer for you. Any athlete, any sport for you that you say, man, this is the toughest one for me to work with them in regards to nutrition, whether it be because they don't listen to you or because of the demands of the sport, anything at all?
That's a tough question. I think from the demand side, MMA is very tough. And those guys are so, you'll even get, you know, well-known fighters, and they are so humble. I mean, I'm just amazed at, you know, they're wonderful people. Tough, I think from a structural standpoint, everything going on, baseball is very tough because of the schedule. Yeah, I think it's extremely tough. And it's partly the stress. The pitchers have an unbelievable amount of stress. I have had tons of guys with GI issues. And I worked, you know, hand in hand with a psychologist at the Braves, who's fantastic, to work on both food, GI, stress, et cetera, because of the gut brain access. I always involved him, but they, you know, it's the stress, it's the travel, it's the, hey, I'm sitting in a bus. The bus was supposed to leave at 2 a.m. Oh, it doesn't leave till 4 a.m. We don't get in till 7 or 8, and we have to turn around and be back at the field at a certain time. It's a crazy hectic schedule, a lot of away games, 80 games, you know, they're traveling. And the food choices aren't always good. And especially if you get into minor league ball, some of those food choices are horrible. It's awful.
I know I'm bouncing all over the place. I try to keep the show structured, folks. It just isn't what happens sometimes. But it kind of reminds me of youth. Sometimes parents, I'll see, like, they're playing soccer, for instance, right? And they'll play soccer, and they're 10 years old, and they'll say, oh, you know, just give her whatever she can have right now that's got high, you know, high glycemic index. Here's a, I'm trying to think on the top of my head. They'll give her some kind of sweet donut 30 minutes before, because she'll burn it off. It won't even impact her at all. What do you think about that?
That's interesting. You know, when I actually get the opposite with parents. I get the parents that are afraid of sports drinks because they don't like the sugar. And I'm going, oh my gosh, your kid relies more on, you know, exogenous carbohydrates, the carbohydrates that they consume versus their glycogen, right? At that age with kids. I think that it's good to build positive, you know, good eating habits early on. So I don't love the whole donut before a soccer game. Give them something that's going to, you know, help them fuel, but also help their body feel good. And not give them cramps or anything. So I think it's a good idea to teach some of these sports nutrition principles and healthy eating principles early on.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. Gatorade's still up there. It's really amazing. Every nutrition book I was reading, it's just like, Gatorade's still there? Wow. So one of the best ones. You know, you've mentioned something. You mentioned a lot of things I wanted to talk about. One of the things you mentioned was gastrointestinal issues before sports. So I don't know if a lot of people know that, but I'm assuming, obviously, it's not good to give them fiber. Before a game, it's not good to give them fiber before a game or an MMA match or soccer.
Get a load of this. I had a runner, and he came to me a couple of years ago, and I'm like, I think I know what's wrong with your diet right away. He had GI issues. He was having about 90 something grams of fiber per day. Yes.
Oh,
Like, how do you do that? And before he ran, within a few hours before running, he had this meal of oatmeal, peanut butter, flax seeds, chia seeds, healthy meal, but way too much fiber. Runners are the ones that are most studied, and they're the ones that supposedly have the most GI issues. But I've seen them in baseball players a ton, a little bit in basketball players. I'm seeing a rise in IBS, you know, which is this kind of vague, you know, doctors don't know necessarily what's going on, but hey, you have irritable bowel syndrome. And it's kind of, that's an interesting one to treat because there are different strategies and you kind of have to try one strategy and then go to the next one, go to the next one. But yeah, I think running is a big one. The jostling of the stomach, baseball is huge with GI. I've had a lot of guys with, you know, loose bowels and stuff right before a game. I had one guy who was a pro, an NBA player, and he's like, yeah, I don't really want to go out on the court and then go to the bathroom in my pants. And I'm like, yeah, let's try to stop that. So tons of GI issues out there. It's stress, it's food choices, eating too close to the game, number of different issues.
What they say, all publicity is good publicity, but maybe not in this case. I don't know.
Can you imagine that would go viral? You know,
oh, I definitely would.
He's got a poop stain on his shorts. Awful. Yeah.
If it was LeBron James, he'd never be remembered for anything else but that incident.
But that.
Yeah. Oh, that also gives me, again, the complexity of nutrition, because I remember working with a client a few years back, and they had irritable bowel syndrome. Blockage, intestinal blockage.
Intestinal blockage? Wow.
Yeah, it was not a good thing. You know that. Yeah. And it was interesting, the diet that they recommended, the gastroenterologist, because they were recommending, don't have fiber. You got to have white bread. You got to have everything the opposite what you normally hear about. And I'm looking at that going, wow, how complex the diet is.
Oh my, so complex. And the other thing is, when you're working with gastroenterologists, some of them, like even for EOE, and I've had a baseball player with that, where, you know, it's the buildup of white blood cells in your esophagus. And so you're, you know, it narrows, food gets stuck. He actually had to go to the ER, but there are different recommendations depending on the gastroenterologist you're working with. So, you know, we have to sit there and navigate that, you know, we've got to give the diet based on their recommendations, but also what we're seeing in the client or athlete.
And that's going to be something we're going to talk about towards the end. I know we got about 15, 16 minutes left. And again, folks, you can find Marie Spano, MarieSpano.com. You can find her there on Instagram. Culture's got to play a role in baseball, right? Does that make
huge,
a role?
Huge role. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of Latino players in there from all kinds of different countries. And I can just imagine the chaos of food and stuff, choices.
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's so hard because they come to this country and, you know, we need to be able to deliver food that they're used to and not Americanized Latin food, you know, as I call it. Or as one coach to me a few years ago, he goes, Marie, rice, white rice, Latin rice, Latin rice. I go, I can try what Latin rice is. I said, I know what it is. It's not that long grain white rice with nothing in it. But it, you know, it's a huge challenge. I had a guy, oh my gosh, a few years ago in the Braves system, and every day, and I kind of watched him. They're like, watch this guy. So I watched him come in. He would make a sandwich out of white bread, ketchup, and mayonnaise on white bread. That's what he would eat. Yes, that's it. He didn't like the other food. And I thought, that's the most disgusting thing ever. But, you know, to him, he's looking at our food going, oh, I don't recognize any of this. So that's an issue. You know, having them out on their own, I've had players go, hey, I've eaten fast food because I know what it is, you know, because I can't read these other menus. So there are all these things that we need to take into account to better work with these athletes, for sure.
Yeah, it's crazy. As a, you know, my family is from Cuba. That's just like, wow. I'm looking at these foods.
Yeah, that's the other thing. The diet is different. Like, people say, oh, this is the Mexican diet. I'm like, no. It depends on where you're from in Mexico. It's not just every country is different. Every region is different. Just like when I came down south, I didn't know what a pimento was. I didn't know people owned deep fat fryers. You know, they looked at me and they're like, I didn't know what half the food was because I'd never heard of it. Grits? I'd never heard of eating grits. I didn't know what they were. So, you know, think of that. If you're in Mexico, it's a huge country. The different areas have way different foods. So it is a challenge. It's a budgetary challenge. And, but they're so, I find the Latin players in baseball are so welcoming with any help because they're not used to, they haven't gotten that. You go in and you help them and they're just so happy.
That's cool.
It's fun to work. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I can see definitely that being a very interesting class for, I don't even know if they have it for registered dietitians, if they have like a culture difference class.
They're starting to. I actually have a friend who puts them on, and they're starting to. And she does it from more of a, she's actually a diabetes expert. She does it from the diabetes. She does work with bariatric surgery patients, and then also cuisine. So how can you, you know, teaching other dietitians and other professionals recipes and foods and stuff.
Yeah, that's another complicated one for sure.
Yeah.
Diabetes, that's where it gets a little dangerous sometimes for trainers who go beyond their scope.
For sure.
Yeah, that's not an easy one. I definitely want to get these questions in before we wrap up, because I definitely have to throw them in there. So I'm trying to see which one. Okay, let me get this one out of the way, because I know this is one that I always get a lot of. So let's say they're asking you, hey, Spano, I don't understand this. I lost body fat quickly from 20 to 10. Now I'm at 10%. I'm trying to get to 9 to 8. And it's taking me like triple the time it took me to get from 20 to 10. Is it true that your body tries to supposedly hold on to fat?
Yeah, I think that's an easy way to put it, that it does get harder as you continue to lose weight. People will have plateaus. People expect that weight loss is linear, and we know it's not. You go up and down over time. And it's also hard because as you lose weight, you know, your calorie needs go down. So then you have to drop them further if you want to continue to lose weight. So that's a big challenge for people. They think, oh, I've been on this, let's say 2000 calorie diet, why don't I continue to lose? Well, you're not, you know, this weight, you're 30 or 40 pounds less. So you don't need all of those calories just to carry around that extra 30 or 40 pounds.
Okay. I'm not going to go into that 3,500 calorie thing, because I know that's much more involved and it gets complicated pretty fast. It's nice to have simplicity, but it misleads people, I think, a lot of times.
Very much so. Very. And then just look at food labels. You don't know how much an app, you don't know what you're eating, how many calories it is, you know?
Yeah. I mean, all kinds of, you know, it's funny because I bought some, I'm a big fan of sheep herder bread. I don't know if you ever had that.
No, what is it?
It's kind of like I don't know. I have to say it's a sweeter type of a sourdough bread. I found it at a bakery up in the mountains. Makes it sound more exotic than it is, but I remember finding it there, but they had it down here at the local grocery store, at least a version of it. Mm-hmm. But I remember weighing one of it because it said like 100 grams was like 110 calories. So I weighed one of the slices. I was like, this is 140 grams. This is like not even close to what it was. It's like a 40% more here.
Yeah.
And it threw me off.
We don't know. You could sit there and put things in, and then if you put it in MyFitnessPal or something, those are off. So it's not an exact science, obviously. And then think about the absorption of calories, almonds versus almond butter. You know, that's that study with white bread and like cheese whiz or something versus cheese and whole grain bread. So,
you know, that brings me another one of these famous lines that I've heard. I'm just curious to see what you thought. It can't be good for you. It's been in the package from McDonald's. No offense, McDonald's. And I bought this in 2000. And it's still all complete. Nothing has to, you know, whatever. You've ever seen those videos and they have these foods. One guy, I remember, used to tell me that this is years ago, a trainer, before I got into fitness, rolled up the white bread and threw it on a wall. So if you can do that and it doesn't break apart, it's not good for you. I think it's like, okay, that's an interesting one. I fell for it though, right? Back 30 years ago, 20 years ago, you really didn't have much going on.
No.
So I don't know if that was a question or not. It was interesting anyway. Okay, I'm heading over to this question really quickly because it reminded me when you were talking about the complexities of baseball players, and it reminded me a lot of police officers because they get stuck into this kind of a situation where they're driving around 12-hour shifts, sometimes longer. And look, it's midnight. Where am I going to go? I got to go to Del Taco. And some of them do package it. Is that something, is that a population you ever worked with, or do you think it would be difficult to work with because of the same thing as the athletes?
I haven't worked with them. There are more dietitians now working with like police and fire. I was a volunteer EMT many years ago. So I know a little bit about it. I've been in, you know, it's very heavy gear and you go into a building. I haven't been into a burning building, but, it's heavy and you might be in somewhere where, you can't drink or eat for a long period of time. I think they do have some of the same challenges. They've got a lot of stress. They've got a different type of stress because it's life or death, right? It's not a game. Although I have had many players who, or some players who have received death threats, crazy enough, for playing a baseball game. But yeah, it's life or death. They've got the challenges of, again, your adrenaline, your stress is always on, your flight or fight hormones. And then somehow you've got to calm down. And then, like you said, eating. And then where, especially if you're in a rural area, what do you eat? What do you eat? Nothing's open late at night.
That's true, yeah.
I remember going to some of these small ballparks and I'd get microwave meals or something, canned food or something from Walmart, because they're in areas where I'm like, oh, this food is, you know, it's not what I grew up eating. So I get that and I'd eat it later in my hotel room because there's nothing open.
Yeah, sometimes you don't have a choice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Sometimes you really don't have much of a choice when you get stuck on these things. Mm-hmm. We got our last few minutes. I mean, I could keep you here all day, but I'd definitely be remiss if I don't ask you about how important is nutrition for pregnant women? This is an issue that just doesn't get covered enough, I don't think. We talk about some other things like alcohol is obviously not a really good thing, or smoking, but mm-hmm. nutrition seems to just, people just ignore it.
It's incredibly important. I feel as if the big thing people get when they go to an OBGYN is take a pregnancy multivitamin, but there's no talk about food. And you're absolutely right, because what the mother eats gets passed on to the baby. We know about fetal alcohol syndrome, but what about things like, hey, they don't have enough choline in their diet. They don't have enough EPA, DHA, all these things for brain and nervous system development. It's incredibly important. And then you take the pregnant, women with they can't eat certain foods because they get nauseous or they just throw up every day. And navigating around that's extremely important.
Yeah, especially for the baby as well with neurobiological development. I forgot what vitamin B it was, that if they're deficient in can cause some serious issues, but the brain development, I can't remember all the vitamin Bs, like 6 or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not
I think it was maybe it was folate.
Oh, folic acid. Yeah. So the neural, neural tube development. And that's so that's usually high in different multivitamins. And that's where, you're getting the synthetic form. You're not getting folate in those multivitamins.
That's true too. You really got to get your own podcast. You really got to get your own podcast. Man.
That sounds like a lot of work. I don't know how you do it.
Oh man. I'm even tempted to even help you with that one. Now, this question is going to be the toughest question you'll have. I think I can understand the plight of a lot of individuals. And I know some of the experts that I respect, like yourself as well, have said scientific literacy is what people are really lacking. And I get it. They don't get that training. I have my doctorate. I've learned about research, but mostly towards the psychology world. Now that I'm getting my other doctorate in exercise science, I get it. I'm starting to see there's a whole different game here. We have different methodologies and it's like, whoa, this is not the same world. Mm-hmm. And I can't even imagine somebody who, no offense, maybe has no educational background or very limited. Maybe they focus on something else. So this isn't a disparaging comment, folks, but maybe they're focusing on law. It gets complicated when you have medical doctors recommending things, either adhering to certain diets. You have champion bodybuilders who look like what people want to look like when they follow them. Look at this guy or a gal, and they're ripped and they look great. They obviously know something. They didn't do something wrong. How do we, can we even navigate through that to people like yourself and others that I respect? How do we navigate that mess?
How do consumers navigate it?
Yeah, not us. Hopefully we're over that, but that becomes really difficult. Can you even do it?
I think it's really tough. And I agree with you. There are many people who are doctors out there and we don't know what their, what their doctorate or what their medical doctor in, but, and they lay down these nutrition, they'll say things about nutrition that it's almost like it's law or it's set in stone or it's for everybody. And, we know they're inaccurate. I think the biggest thing consumers can do is look at the background, look at some of the fine people who are trusted, look to make sure that what they have in their bio, did they actually study in this area? Because I notice a lot of them, they don't give the details. So it says Dr. So-and-so, but then you have to go to their website. And then on the website, you can't find stuff. It's kind of crazy. I think people who have that background will highlight it and they'll put their credentials up front. And those who don't, they tend to hide it. So I think that's a big thing. They don't tell you what their medical doctor of or what their specialty is. That to me is the biggest thing. And then look at people who are experts maybe commenting. Do they follow these people? Do they comment? Do they agree with them? That's another way to kind of sift through that maze, because it is difficult. There's a lot of garbage out there.
And I guess this might not be a humongously popular comment, but I'll say it. But just because they're an MD, folks, and they don't have as many nutrition classes as you think. This is not a disparaging comment. Some of them that I've met, medical doctors that I like and respect, they'll tell me, you know, go to a nutritionist. This is not my game. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll give me a swift kick out. And I've had other doctors who do the same thing, and they'll send you to a specialist. When it comes to nutrition, it's definitely one of the reasons I bring it up, is I have a pet peeve sometimes with GPs who will recommend psychiatric medications when they're not as familiar with it as a psychiatrist. So All of a sudden they're just dispensing things and not really following up.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I think, you know, it's funny because I'll get somebody and they'll have these vague instructions from a physician. Eat a low-fat diet, do this, do that. And I'm like, people who have no nutrition literacy, they don't know how to do this. Well, how do I do that? What do you want from me? Lose 30 pounds. Well, how? Should I just starve myself? Should I go on intermittent fasting? What should I do? So I see that a lot. And I wish they would refer, just like if I get somebody and I, you know, before I get a client that comes to me, I always talk to them first, because it will definitely refer to someone who's more of an expert in a specific area, especially, you know, whether it's eating disorders, type 2 diabetes, or I'm always saying, hey, this person's a better expert at this particular area. Here's who I'd go to for this. Because let's face it, I work in nutrition, but my specialty is sports. I don't know, you know, there are better dietitians for a lot of different areas, you know, that have certain expertise that I don't have, just like medical doctors. Like you said, you know, a general practitioner, you know, refer to a psychiatrist, refer to an orthopedist. That's the way I think it should work.
That's a great one too, to intro a future episode coming up. We have a nutritionist who works with oncology patients. So that's what she specializes in. That's a whole different game too.
Whole different game. Yeah. I would absolutely refer to her. I mean, she does that day in and day out. That's a specialty.
Absolutely. So again, if you're in sports, if you have children in sports, if you're a fighter yourself or special forces, which I consider special forces to be similar, even the military, a lot of times I think it can help a lot understanding nutrition going in. And law enforcement, definitely look up mariespano.com, mariespano.com. It's M-A-R-I-E-S-P-A-N-O. Check it out. Check it out over at Instagram. If you're on Instagram, I think you'll learn a lot. I learn a lot. I'm always excited to see what the new posts are. And again, look at the bios she mentions. It's a great point. Marie, I can't thank you enough for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I love the conversation. Yeah, I like the different areas we go into. You cover a lot of ground.
And we barely touched the tip of the iceberg, and that's not even a joke. We have so many areas to cover. It's amazing. I guess my last question for fun is, do you have any vices when it comes to eating?
Any vices?
Vices like sweet tooth or anything at all that you say, oh, I have to give in. This is what I give in. Is it a donut? Is it a cookie? Anything like that? Or does it?
You know, it's funny. When I was growing up, no food was really off limits. So we had a lot of soda in our house. We had potato chips. We had food like that. So if I want potato chips, I'll eat potato chips. You mentioned those early on. Once in a while, I like to have them. I like that. Sometimes I like something sweet. I think those are the biggest things. I don't really love fried food. It doesn't settle well. Yeah, so I'd say sometimes that, salty, crunchy, absolutely, yeah.
Sweet and salty?
No, just salty and crunchy, like potato chips or sweet chips. Yeah.
That was
like
the chips. Cuban in me there, yeah. I like the old French fries and the hot fudge sundae idea. Well, there you go, folks. Go visit mariespano.com. And thank you very much for listening, everybody. Remember, it's a lot more complicated than you think. I don't mean to scare you, but it definitely means you've got to do your research and listen to the people who are the experts in this field. You know what to do. Share, subscribe, hit that like button. Go check out your cupboard and refrigerator and see what's going on.